Today, I want to tell a story from early Buddhism that teaches us something about how to live. But first, I want to set the stage a little bit. I want to fill you in on some key characters in the story, who they are and why they matter. And one of the things about stories from the early Buddhist literature is that they're filled with stories about people finding their way in their lives, oftentimes in ways like we do, you know. And this story is about the elite, but that's not always so. Some stories are quite about quite simple, ordinary people. I'll tell you ahead of time that we could critique the story in terms of the patriarchy and power dynamics, and I want to acknowledge that that's a good thing to do, but I'm not going to do that today. I might mention a few things, but there's something that we can learn from this story that doesn't have anything to do with that. So, there was a king in Buddhist time called King Udana. And as was the custom of the time, there were many women in the king's household. Sometimes these are referred to as a harem, sometimes as wives, sometimes as concubines. In the stories of King Udana, there is a little said about most of them. We don't know their names. But one, named Queen Malika, was named. And there are stories about her. It's said that she was famous for her devotion to the Buddha, her generosity, her kindness, and that she introduced King Udana to the Buddha and to the Buddha's teachings. So Queen Malika was from a much lower status family than the king, and it is said that the king encountered her when he was returning from a big loss in a battle. And he heard her singing with joy after she had given alms to the Buddha. So imagine this fellow's riding in on his horse, and he hears this woman's beautiful, joyful singing. And so he went and sought her out. And she took the reins of the horse and looked him directly in the eye and consoled him in his loss. So you get the feeling that this was kind of a bold woman for the time. And so there's lots of stories about them. Not lots, but there's some. Describe her as the epitome of so-called wifely virtues, obedient, rising before her husband, going to bed after him, serving him faithfully. But there's also stories about troubles in their marriage, and you get the idea she was no wimp. And the interesting thing about that is that she went and spoke to the Buddha about her problems, and he went and taught the teachings to the king. Right? It's like, dude, you need some help here. So, another character in the story is Ananda. And Ananda was Buddha's attendant for many, many years. He's a beloved figure in Buddhism. One of the reasons is while other people were rapidly progressing through states of deeper and deeper meditation, Ananda lagged behind, seriously, seriously lagged behind. And yet, he was the closest to the Buddha. He had a phenomenal memory, and it's said that he memorized everything the Buddha said, and he was trusted not only to convey the Buddha's words to others and to see to the Buddha's needs, but also to teach on his own. And in particular, he taught and supported lay people, and that included women. He was an advocate for women's inclusion in the ordained Sangha, and there's a whole other story about how that occurred that I won't tell today, but after the Buddha's death, he was taken to task for that by some of the other disciples. But he stuck to his gun. So he's remembered for all these things, including his phenomenal memory that he recalled everything the Buddha ever taught. After the Buddha's death, there was a council that was convened to decide how to move forward, what was important, what wasn't important. And he was almost excluded because he had not attained awakening. So he's the one that carried all the teachings, but he had not personally attained awakening and didn't until the night before the council. So then he got included in the council. So I think many of us can relate to Ananda, to his struggles, his empathy, his inclusivity, and we can be inspired by his tenacity and his courage to speak up for what was right and to keep moving forward. So he's an important figure. And in Soto Zen Buddhism, there's a ceremony performed by ordained women that honors him and expresses gratitude for making it possible for women to be ordained. So again, you know, we could talk a lot about the power dynamics in this story, but I think we can also just express gratitude for every person doing what they can in the system they're in. So, just as an aside in terms of gender, our founder, the founder of our school, Ehe Dogen, stated quite clearly in the 12th century that women were fully equal to men, including their ability to realize the teachings, and that to consider gender or any other characteristic with regards to awakening was idiotic and antithetical to the teachings. So all of this is a backdrop to the story I want to tell you today, which has nothing to do with gender or power dynamics, really. I mean, everything does, but that's not the focus. But it does have to do with realization and the way we live our lives and practice with other beings. So here's the story. At that time, King Udana was enjoying himself in the park. Queen Malika, with the women in the household, went to him and said, "Our teacher, the Reverend Ananda, they say, is sitting at the root of a certain tree not far from the park." They said to him, "Your Majesty, our teacher, the Reverend Ananda, they say, is sitting at the root of a certain tree not far from the park." Repeat. "We would like to see the Reverend Ananda." "In that case," the king says, "go see Ananda the contemplative." So the women of the household went to the venerable Ananda, and on arrival, having bowed down to him, sat to one side. As they were sitting there, Venerable Ananda instructed, urged, roused, and encouraged them with a Dharma talk. Having been instructed, urged, roused, and encouraged with a Dharma talk by Venerable Ananda, they offered him 500 upper robes. Then, they, delighting in and approving of Venerable Ananda's words, having gotten up from their seats, having bowed to him and circumambulated around him, keeping him on their right, they went to King Udana. King Udana saw them coming from afar, and on seeing them, said to them, "Did you see Ananda the contemplative?" "We saw the Reverend Ananda, your Majesty. Did you give him anything?" "We gave him 500 upper robes, your Majesty." And this is where the fun part comes in. King Udana criticized and complained and spread it about, how can Ananda the contemplative accept so many robes? Is he going to deal in the cloth business? Is he going to set up shop? Then King Udana went to Venerable Ananda and, on arrival, exchanged courteous greetings with him. After an exchange of friendly greetings and courtesies, he sat down. As he was sitting there, he said to Venerable Ananda, "Did the women of my household come, Master Ananda?" "They came, great king." "Did they give Master Ananda anything?" "They gave me 500 upper robes, great king." "But what will Master Ananda do with these many robes?" "We will share them with those monks who have worn out robes, great king." "But what will you do with the old worn out robes, Master Ananda?" "We will make canopies, great king." "But what will you do with the old worn out canopies, Master Ananda?" "We will make mattress covers, great king." "But what will you do with the old worn out mattress covers, Master Ananda?" "We will make floor coverings, great king." "But what will you do with the old worn out floor coverings, Master Ananda?" "We will make foot wiping cloths, great king." "But what will you do with the old worn out foot wiping cloths, Master Ananda?" "We will make dust rags, great king." "But what will you do with the old worn out dust rags, Master Ananda?" "Having pounded them and kneaded them with clay, we will spread them on it as plaster, great king." Then King Udana, thinking, these Sakya Sangha monks using everything appropriately, they don't go to waste. He offered Venerable Ananda another 500 upper robes. So it was the first robe alms of 1,000 robes accrued by Venerable Ananda. So I think we can say that this story teaches us how to relate to what we're given in this life. Yeah? To take care, to respect each thing, to give it its full life, make the most of things, attend to how we use resources. This is crucial. The teachings of our school, of Soto Zen, strongly emphasize caring for all aspects of our life, caring for all things, all beings, as Buddha. Dogen teaches us in the Tenzo Kyokun instructions to the cook to see water as our lifeblood and to treat a pot as our own head. All aspects of our lives are Buddha. He and Keizan Zenji both made this point. So let me read you a couple of things about Keizan and Dogen Zenji. So, this is Dogen. "The colors of the mountains and the sound of mountain streams are the voice and embodiment of Sakyamuni Buddha." Keizan Zenji says, "You should not see Sakyamuni Buddha in anything other than nature and living things. Mountains, rivers, and all things in nature may take on various forms, but they are all the embodiment of Sakyamuni Buddha." Everything is the embodiment of Sakyamuni Buddha. We can also think about this in terms of the people and other beings in our lives, right? The colors of each person, the sound of each person, are the voice and embodiment of Sakyamuni Buddha. The mountains, rivers, every being, every breath, every aspect may take various forms, but they are all the embodiment of Sakyamuni Buddha. So these are powerful teachings that teach us how to relate to our lives, our ordinary lives, and to the world that we know. And that is to take care, to have empathy, to have concern and respect. But I think that's not enough. That intention is not enough. We must also be able to see clearly and think clearly. We must have eyes that are not limited to what is most obvious. Did I bring that with me? No, I didn't. Ananda's story points us to a view that is broad and inclusive. It's creative and wise. It teaches us that what can unfold, it teaches us what can unfold when we're not attached to a set view. So, in a way, Ananda did not look at a robe and see only robe. He saw the myriad ways that this cloth could contribute, could give its life. So the robe was not static and fixed in his view. It could change. It could evolve. He saw with the eye of wisdom. He saw impermanence, change, potential. So in this view, in a sense, the robe is not a robe. It's a robe only because it's because of its role at a certain time. This view liberates us, and everything and everyone we come in contact with. So often, I think, we cannot imagine what is beyond what is right in front of us, or what we think is right in front of us. We have a fixed view. A robe is a robe. It cannot be a canopy, a bedsheet, or a rag. Or we think, this thing has reached the end of how it can serve me, so I'll throw it away. Or this person is this or that. Period. We can stop there. We can stop with the most superficial impressions, meaning, aspect, and we are greatly impoverished by that. And so is everyone and everything else. We may not see anything else. We are confined, distracted by a word, a definition, a thought. In a sense, the word or definition controls us. We're controlled by what we can see. When we relate to definitions or set views in this way, we see nothing beyond what we have constructed. If we're open and curious, what might we learn about how things, people, other beings can unfold, about what they are already that we don't even see? When we meet a person or a being, do we make assumptions? When we relate, do we shrink the world down into one possibility? Oh, that's a robe. I know what a robe is. I know what this person is. I know what this thing is. I know who I am. I know. It's this. When we have an encounter with something, particularly something familiar, or have a particular experience, do we pigeonhole? This means that. Do we do that to ourselves? Do we do that to others? Or we enter a process and we think, oh, I know what's going to come of that. I can't talk to that person again. I know exactly what's going to happen. I know what's going to happen. Do we acknowledge impermanence, complexity, creativity? We may also be so caught in only seeing how something can be amassed. We may be caught, as King Udana was, in greed. King Udana assumed that Ananda wanted all these robes so that he could make some money off them or amass something, right? That's what his mind thought was going on. We can be caught in that. We can be caught in just the habit of amassing things, building up, having more and more. King Udana could not see the possibilities. He assumes greed. He attributes to Ananda that motivation. Perhaps it's the only motivation that he can think of. Greed, the desire for more and bigger, is such a powerful and dominant force in our lives. In our world, worth is equated with size and growth. But that is corrosive. It steals from us our peace of mind and the beauty of a thing as it is, a circumstance, a community, a person. When we practice with peace of mind, and recognizing the beauty of each aspect, each stage, each fullness, growth or simple continuance or even passing comes as they will naturally. The beauty of a thing, a situation, a person, its role, its shape, and its function is enough. I think that when we shift our view and we follow Ananda in this way and not King Udana, I don't want to make King Udana into like a foil for this, but he's pretty good. This is like the heart of resilience, I think. Attachment, we are told, is the cause of suffering. It's this kind of attachment. Gripping, limiting, corrosive attachment. Not generous-hearted, loving attachment that wants growth and change and fruition. That is life-giving. But this narrow-minded, I know, you know, this is corrosive. It can be very difficult to shed binding attachments and see more clearly. Not all of us can see this fullness that Ananda sees in the story. And we should never, of course, be attached to a vision of perfection. That just makes us more tight and bedeviled by longing. When we shed these attachments, we can see potential. We can be awed. Not in some, you know, like this magnificent sunrise way, but just amazing. This robe can become a canopy, can become a mattress pad, can become a foot rag, can become plaster. I think Queen Malika and Ananda show us that we give fully, we respect each other, we respect our world, discarding nothing as less than. Dharma gates are boundless. So I think we ask ourselves, can we open our eyes, expand our perspective, respond creatively to what comes our way? things, people, other beings, events, challenges. This is the expression of Buddha's teachings. Can we care for what is bringing itself to our lives? I think when we can do this, even for a moment, we are not bound by our limited views. We wake up and we live generously. So I thought I'd ask you this week to maybe spend some time considering this story. Yeah. Considering what's possible. Stop periodically. How limited is my view? What am I not seeing? What's possible?